Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Riverside Center for the Performing Arts in this morning. Patrick Ahern is here. Advocate Christie's The Mousetrap. He's about to come to Riverside. Patrick, good morning. We've got a full house in here this morning.
Well, nearly a full house, yeah. But everybody wants to be with Ted and Town Talk, so you get a full house.
Right, and you everybody wants to get up early.
Yeah, yeah, but no, you know me. I always love being here.
Yeah, no, you were just here a few weeks ago. As I knew about doing this, I thought we should do this.
We got a new one opening next week, yeah. So it's good to talk about it, yeah.
We welcome back another old friend is here this morning, Andrew Foote. Andrew, I haven't seen you in about a year, and I've not seen you in your directing Mousetrap.
Yes, yes. I'm very excited to get to make my Riverside directing debut here. It's really fun to be on what we call the other side of the table and see how the sausage is made from the inside. But yeah, I'm having the time of my life right now.
You just told me that you have directed before, but this is the first time at Riverside.
First time here, yeah. Patrick called me in December, and I was doing a show up in New York, not really enjoying myself. I was performing, and I wasn't really enjoying myself. And out of the blue, Patrick called me and offered me this, and it was really exciting. And then maybe 6 hours later, my friend sitting next to me, Mia, she comes to see that show, and
We
put some dots together, and lo and behold, here she is with me. This is Mia Gomez Montero, a good friend of mine, playing the lead in The Mousetrap.
Mia, have you ever done welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Have you ever done Mousetrap before?
I haven't done The Mousetrap before, but I'm not a stranger to its very long run happening in the West End. I just came back from England in the fall. I got my master's out there in London. And so it was very serendipitous timing when I went to go see Andrew in this show, and we reconnected after a few years. And he was like, "Are you familiar?" And I was like, "Of course I'm familiar with that big marquee sitting in central London." So yeah, I'm thrilled to be doing it. It's very fun, yeah.
So Patrick, I'll go back to you. How did you decide, or what made you decide that Andrew would be a good fit to be your director?
Observation.
I'm also paying him $50,000 to do this. This is a big grant that, you know, because
no,
I'm rich.
You just, I don't know. It's a feeling, it's a sense. When we work together doing Bridges of Madison County, you know, I always say to you, the casting process is so important, because not only are you hiring talent, the voice, but you're hiring somebody that's intelligent, that brings something to the process. You know, I'm a collaborator. I don't like to dictate, this is the way we're doing it, we're not veering from this. I like to be the visionary and set up the boundaries. But when I hire actors, I'm hoping that they're going to come with their little suitcase of things that they are so good at. And Andrew, I love working with Adrian, because I had worked with Adrian prior. But they're both pretty much out of the same mold. They're smart. They get it. They get an audience. And they give, they suggest, which is really great. So when you see how a person works in that way, then you think to yourself, you know, because some performers don't want to touch it at all, and other performers get it. You know, I think if you have had good experiences and good learning processes with other directors in your life, then you might want to do it. So we had a couple of conversations, and then he had said to me over the course of time, "Well, could I ever come down and maybe assist you or whatever?" And I thought, well, I mean, you could come and assist, but I think you're further along that you could probably do something. And so I called him. I said, "I think this could probably be something good for you." And he said, "I've done it." I went, "Oh wow, that's great." And so you know how it works. Things, there's no coincidences. So I asked him to do it, and he said he would do it, and his wife said it was the best Christmas present that he could have had. So there you go.
You bring all kinds of people. I mean, I meet so many people from Riverside. Mm-hmm. I'm grateful to do it. Andrew, you and Chris Sanders would be another one who just seemed to understand things at a different level. And so when I heard you were directing this, I thought, oh, this, just because you've come in every show you've done, whether it's been Bridges of Madison County or the
Next Wonder, to Normal.
Next. We would just have conversations on that show, and it would be just different than this is what happens, and I like this, and it was just kind of deeper.
Well, I've always been nosy. That's the thing. So, you know, going back to when I was first started this at 18, of always trying to get information about what really was going on at every place that I worked, and trying to pick up skills. And I didn't go to college for this, and so I knew that my success was going to be learning on the job, and that was, and also thriving in the industry was going to require more than just being necessarily a great, you know, striving to be a great actor. It was trying to just be a great resident of show business. The way I think about it, but the thing that I think actually is when you're casting, when you're meeting people, is finding out. I think we all in show business kind of speak the same language, but it's almost like Chinese, where you, not only do we speak the same language, but you want to find somebody that speaks the same dialect of that language that you speak. And so when you meet people, like having conversations like Patrick and I did, and then also, and I took this into the casting process of, because we have to, as a director, you have to communicate with actors in a very specific and also efficient way, is finding actors that speak that same language. So, and I got lucky that I found the cast that I did, and also that I've known Mia since she was, 14 years old. So in a way, and I've directed her before, I was like, well, why wouldn't I use someone who I know speaks the language? Because I kind of, you know, in a very small ways, you know, taught her some of that stuff, if I could be so bold as to say that, you know, not to, and she went on and learned, you know, you have your master's, right? She went on and learned the real talk. this process has been really fantastic, just to get behind the scenes and really, you know, bring a show along.
That is interesting, speaking your own, you know, as a director, finding people that will, you know, speak your own language.
Yeah.
Just because you're dealing with people on a different level as a director.
You don't want to be a stranger in a strange land. You want to be, you know, that you want to have a shorthand to be able to, you know, because it's like, it's almost like a kitchen where you watch chefs talk to each other in a shorthand that you might not understand, but they do. And, you know, and this one, I have to be the head chef.
Yeah, yeah. So Mia, for you to be in a show being directed by someone you know so well has to be comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, I will second what Andrew has said about that the dialect of Mandarin that I have learned was from the, I was really young when I was first directed by Andrew, and I think that was kind of a vessel for me to be able to understand. We were doing very preliminary, you know, children's theater, but I felt like a professional. He treated me with respect and welcomed me into the space, and that was something that taught me how to value myself as a vessel for being a performer and an entertainer. And I think that that's something that can only be taught when you have great people around you. And I am really grateful to him and Adrian for their, you know, kind of role in my life and, you know, my career and things like that. And it is wonderful to work in environments where collaboration is, you know, is the key to so much of it and to the success of it. And being proud of the thing that you're working on because it's such a monstrosity is something that can be a little bit difficult to come by when so many brains are working together.
Yeah.
But this experience has been nothing short of wonderful, and I'm so grateful to be a part of it. And everyone truly does. There's a very, there's kind of like in your peripheral, you feel like this, like, at least I do, this like buzzing sort of feeling of like, okay, it's happening. It's like kind of the, you know, the little magic feeling. And I'm really grateful for the place that we're at now in the process, and I'm only excited for people to come in and have our final piece to the puzzle, which is the audience come in to see it.
Yeah. You take a quick break, Patrick. I've got two just in what Mia gave there. I've got two possible book titles when we put your book together someday. So many brains working together. That could be a book title, or great people around you.
As long as you'll be my ghostwriter, we'll get the book done. Yeah.
Quick break. RiversideDT.com is how you find out more. Agatha Christie's The Mousetrap begins July 15th. Is that
15th?
What that's, 15th is the opening.
Next Wednesday.
July 15th. Patrick, Andrew, and Mia here. More coming up on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. Miss a part of the show? No problem. Just subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And now, back to your host, Ted Schubel.
Riverside Center for the Performing Arts, Agatha Christie's The Mousetrap begins July 15th. RiversideDT.com to get your tickets. This is, Andrew, this is really a popular show.
Oh, the most popular show. It's been running continuously in London since 1952. And of course, the question that's how, why, what's the reason? What's the secret to The Mousetrap? The secret is the secret. Previous to this, Agatha Christie had successful shows in the West End, but she was always frustrated that when people would review her shows, her mysteries, that the reviewer almost always would give away the ending to the show. And so when this opened, she really, really had it put out there that she did not want anyone to ever share the secret. And so that kind of became the little calling card for this show. So much so that there's at the end of the curtain call, in London, and we're going to do it too, there's a little speech that one of the actors gives asking the audience that now they've seen The Mousetrap, that they are now partners in crime, and that we ask that they hold the secret of The Mousetrap in their heart and not tell it. And so she protected so much that she said, while the show runs in London, no TV adaptation, no movie adaptation will ever be done until it closes. And it just became a thing, and then broke the record, and then they're closing in on 31,000 performances continuously in London, so it's a really special piece, and working on it, I can see why this is the one that all of the it's been spoofed. The movie The Clue is kind of a loose, farcical adaptation of this show in structure. It's kind of magical. It's cool.
How did you decide on it, Patrick? I mean, it's almost the kind of show you can't go wrong on just because it's so popular.
We had good success with the Murder on the Orient Express.
Oh, that was, I had forgotten who, I knew that story, but had forgotten the ending, and that was just terrific.
That was indicative of considering it. I know of its fame and how much people, love the story, and you can't go wrong with Agatha Christie. I think that, I think people today, I know myself, I find myself watching the mystery kind of, like Dateline or 48 Hours, or, there's some intrigue by following a story and your head going, you're trying to figure it out. So it was just kind of a light bulb moment, and I said, we're going to do it. And we'd been waiting to do Clue because the rights were pulled on us twice.
Yeah.
So I said, well, hell, So that's how it came about. And believe it or not, Ted, it's the first show this year. This is our fourth show it's had the biggest presale of any, and the first three shows were musicals, so
which is so cool.
It really helps with how I've been stressing the fact that I want to balance our seasons out with doing at least two plays a season.
That says a lot about the audience too.
Not that
loving a musical is something to be something not to be ashamed of, but the fact that this area supports drama like that. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that's really cool. As someone who goes around the country and works at a lot of different theaters, it's the musicals that are the rising tide that float the boats for this in the seasons. But for the plays here to kind of serve that role is so different. And it speaks to, you know, the demographics we have here, the people that are willing to, that want that. But it also speaks to how the organization is matching that. You know, meeting the moment there for them. It's kind of cool. It's really cool. You bring them, you know, you bring them what they want. You meet them where they are.
Yep.
But you also, to expand it, drama is just not, it's not the kind of selling thing around the country. So this is cool. Really cool to know that it's going to be so embraced and to tell your cast that.
And you've had some really good shows this year. Some of the musicals.
It's I mean, I think this year it's everybody's experiencing some downtrends because of the gas prices, grocery prices. We're in a war. All of those things, you know, that kind of affect. Yeah. I mean, fortunately and unfortunately, we're kind of a luxury. You know, if you have the expendable money to go to the theater, or you're so fortunate to have enough to buy season tickets, it's great. But if it's, you know, a quart of milk or your gas tank has to be filled, those are the things that come first. So, this is our, eighth, ninth play we've done.
Was that Golden Pond the first one? I'm trying to remember.
No, the first one was back in 2014. When we were going to do West Side Story, and then they called me and said they were going to have to pull the rights, and there was a tour or whatever, I don't know, it had a revival, and it was going to be at the National Theater, and I said, well, is there any way we can do it? Once they've played the National, could we do it then? And they said yes. And so I had... Forever Plaid was running at the time. It came right after we'd opened the season with Gypsy. Of course, Mr. Wayman had just passed away. Forever Plaid, which I was really excited about, but I couldn't stretch. I didn't think I could stretch Forever Plaid for 14 weeks until West Side Story opened. So I said, you know, because God love him, but Ron Wayman was never going to do play.
And this was a big deal.
Golden Age. It was Oklahoma. It was The Sound of Music. That's what we did, or that's what he did. And whenever I brought it up, he would just shoot it down. And so I thought, well, you know, now's our chance. So we did Steel Magnolias. I thought people know the title. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I could get the cast together, got a director together, and it did very well. And we didn't have any real great push of publicity, because when I had made the decision, I mean, it was only a couple months before we had opened it, and you know, so it did very well. And based on that, I said, okay, we got to keep this going. So the second one we did was Driving Miss Daisy, and it was bigger than the musicals. Some of the we had, I think, for the run, we had over 13,000 people through our doors to see that show. And of course, we had Karen Grassley from Little House on the Prairie. She was Daisy. And then I can't remember the gentleman's name from Baltimore. They were just terrific.
They were.
Yeah. And so I haven't stopped.
Yeah.
We've kept it going. And next year, we're going to do two. So, you know. And Andrew's going to be back to do the first one. I can't tell you yet.
I was just going to say, I know you're, I'm trying to think. I think you haven't announced yet.
No.
Yeah, we can talk about it.
In a few more weeks.
We've got big ideas. Yeah. We've got big ideas for it.
Yeah.
So, Mia, to be in a play, to be in a show like this, it is so mysterious to the audience. That's got to be fun.
Oh, yeah. I mean, personally, I am like a lover of, you know, there's a kind of been a resurgence in the last few years of like really incredible scream queen, like lovely pieces of the genre. So I'm really excited to be a part of that. Similar to what Patrick said, I have a fascination for true crime, and that kind of world is so interesting to me. But even just thinking about how this play kind of started in very much in their contemporary world in 1952, and seeing it now as kind of like a piece of history and knowing that we're a part of the legacy is something really wonderful and fun to be a part of. But yeah, I get to have my Scream Queen moment, which I'm very thrilled about. And yeah, I am hopeful to continue working through this genre. I adore Agatha Christie. I adore the way that she's written the female characters in the show. She's made them super complex, especially for the time. You've seen kind of, at the time, there might have been a wash of a certain archetype of what female characters could be, especially in a murder mystery or a whodunit. And I'm so grateful that she wrote Molly in the way that she is. She's complex and she's nuanced, and she's just been so fun to kind of bite into. And it's, yeah, I'm so excited for people to see what we're doing.
I never thought of that. Just how she writes and develops characters. That is interesting.
Yeah, it's great. There's a few different women in the show, and everyone. We were working on a scene yesterday of, like, you know, kind of two of the women in the show, and we were talking about how there's not sort of a blanket statement of these are the women in the show. They're so specific, and they go through so much, and their lives are really honestly portrayed in the work. And all we can do as artists who are doing, you know, performing arts or theater, we're only the vessels for what, you know, the playwright put on the page. So I'm grateful that we have a team of people who respect so much what is on the page. And yeah, there was a ton of stuff that Andrew sent over before we got started, in a very wonderful long welcome email, that we're so grateful for the amount of material and just like love he had poured in before we even got there. So yeah.
So talk about that.
Well, yeah, you have to be comprehensive especially when I think some people would say, oh, is it a burden trying to capture something that's so successful and put a new spin on it and put it on stage, you know, do you feel overwhelmed by that? And the only way to figure that out is to go through it, to go through all the information and really, really give it, try to put fresh eyes on it. And so I wanted to make sure that I understood every bit of the history of this piece, every bit of why she wrote it, when she wrote it, all of these ideas. And then also honor the fact that even though it's a genre creator almost, you know, it's become iconic, that also that the influences, well, the show influenced so many things, you kind of circle back around that those other things like Clue and Knives Out, the Netflix, you know, trilogy,
love
those
that.
Things, they also have added to this genre and to this kind of piece a little bit elements of comedy and things. And I thought, well, you know, to make this fresher, to make this, is, can I take the realism that Agatha Christie has created and these characters that are really honest, but also just give it a little bit of a lift and make it just a little funny? And I was sitting, my wife Adrienne and I, she came to see a run and we counted. She says, I think you added about 12 jokes. And I said, okay, can we still have it be this realistic murder? Does it still play? And she says, yeah, it does. She's like, but don't add 13. But it really was this has been a 6-month process of developing this, which you don't get. It's 6 months of meetings with my designers and the other artists that work on this piece in putting it together, which is like a luxury. From this, you know, my background is summer stock, doing things as quick and as good as you possibly can. This is a nice long process where I can develop an idea and see it through and collaborate with artists so that something, you know, a one sentence that I said back in January, I now in July am seeing coming to life on stage. So it's fantastic, you know, 6 months of my life and now it's ready to go.
Coming together.
Yeah, it's excellent.
RiversideDT.com, the Mousetrap begins July 15th at Riverside. Get your tickets. Mia, Andrew, and Patrick here this morning on News Talk 1230 WFEA. Quick break, we'll continue on this morning. It's 8:31.
From the Fredericksburg FreePress.com studios, this is News Talk 1230 WFEA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. It's the only local talk show in Fredericksburg. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. Subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite streaming platform to hear Town Talk anytime, 24/7, 365. And now, Ted Schubel.
Good stuff this morning as we talk Riverside Center for the Performing Arts in Stafford. Patrick Ahern is here, Andrew Foote, and Mia Gomez Montero is here. Mia is in Mousetrap. Mia, how did you get involved? What's your story about, you know, getting involved in acting and everything?
Well, I was bitten by the bug from a young age. I'm a New Jersey local, so I grew up kind of in a suburb of New York City in Secaucus, New Jersey. And, you know, it could be very poetic, and I can say that I spent my life looking at the skyline, and that was what my childhood was.
Sure.
My mother, I really credit it all to her. She is a teacher. She's an English teacher. And she kind of instilled in me, like, just a love for literature and stories. And then once I discovered Disney, there was no going back, because I was destined to, you know, want to, you know, be a Disney princess and sing and dress up and, you know.
Did you sing all the songs? Because my girls would always, whenever
we'd go
on long trips.
I know my mother's listening to this and she's like, yep, she's not in her head. You know what I mean? She's like, absolutely, that's it. It started from when I was really young, and I, you know, I was in dance, as any little girl is. You know, mom puts her in dance and I loved it. And then there was an opportunity for me to take up singing lessons at my dance studio, and I was singing, you know, Part of Your World, and that's kind of what happened. And then I started doing more and more local community theater, and I was so lucky to grow up in New Jersey, knowing that there was such it's the epicenter, truly, in my mind, of like community theater, and, you know, being a New York Broadway adjacent kid. And I did a lot of auditioning when I was little too, for, you know, things like Matilda were on Broadway. So yeah, I was really lucky that my mom took on the role of manager and was just like bringing me in, and we would have a little girls' day and get Starbucks, and I would go sing at an audition and be like, this is, you know, I played hooky and I didn't go to school today, and I went and auditioned for Broadway, and it was really fun. I was doing a ton of community theater growing up, and it was kind of, everybody says if you can do anything else other than this industry and be happy, you should probably go do that thing. And every time I had ever kind of veered away from it, I knew that was my thing, and I had to go back to it. So, yeah, just a storyteller from the beginning, I think.
How interesting. You're one of the first people that have come to, you know, have talked about, you know, Disney being such a such a strong influence.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in the early 2000s, so like those movies were definitely kind of flourishing and at their peak, and I think that those stories are so accessible to everybody and relatable. But yeah, and then there was like discovery of the musical world was something that was so interesting to me, because a lot of musicals are really marketed toward young kids, you know, like Shrek the Musical. I mean, Shrek the Musical is a little crass sometimes, but, you know, Shrek the Musical had come out when I was a young kid on Broadway. And so there was a lot of stuff that was, there was a lot of really great stuff coming to Broadway at the time when I was growing up.
And I would think, yeah, as an actress, getting to do a role like this is it will show that you can do all kinds of roles. If you can, you know, you can do the musical roles, you can do this kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, the funny thing with Molly, and to Andrew's point about kind of this comedic approach that we've spun things on, I love comedy. I don't get to do it often, but I've really found that this show specifically, especially kind of just like this dry English way of being silly and funny, is a really great kind of access point into what comedy is. And I think I've done a few plays in my career, and, you know, in college and things like that. And I've always loved the ability to do more research, like to do more than necessary to know about what the play is and what world it's living in. I've done things set in, you know, the late 1960s. I've done, you know, I did The Skin of Our Teeth. So, you know, a Wilder play is something that's its own genre entirely. But I think that I will always love musicals, but I've really enjoyed diving into the world of what this genre is, and doing a straight play specifically, especially in such a great season where we're sandwiched between two, you know, mega musicals, like incredible, massive musicals. But I'm grateful to be at Monkswell Manor. Yeah.
Well, and the other thing, to be in a role and in knowing how the show ends, of knowing how. Knowing that you're taking the audience down a path that they are thinking, and knowing that that's not really gonna, how it's going to end.
Yeah, we're planting the seed for sure. I'm excited for people to come and see it and have their thoughts at intermission and then at the end of the show. But I'm also super curious about if people, you know, deign to come and see it more than once. There's a lot of Easter eggs, like directorially that and you know, collaboratively, that we've all kind of sprinkled in there, that if you choose to come see it more than once, you'll be in on the secret at that point, right?
Yeah, I'm constantly thinking, more so in this show than I would directing anything else. You have to think what the audience is thinking, but you have to go around to each actor and say, when this person says this line, I want you to find a way to look suspicious. You want like right up into the end, you want the audience, having their, their pick, okay, it's going to be them. Because remember when he went through that door, remember he turned his head, that kind of thing. And it's adding that as much as you can to keep people on the edge of their seats, but also finding a way. I want to manipulate the audience attention and mind, but also, can we find a way to make that honest to what your character's real story is, whether or not you know if you are the murderer or not? Or I need to it's like a scorecard, and keeping you want it to be the buzzer beater at the end of the basketball game, that, the one who ends up being the murderer. So it's fun to work on that level, because to maintain that, keep the ball in the air for that long, that's the number one job of the director of this piece, is to keep them guessing the whole time. And that's not usually what you do as a director. You have a story, you have the truth, you have the honesty of it, and it wraps up. But this one is, you want the second to last page, you get the resolution of this. And it should be pretty surprising if we've done our job, Mia.
Yeah.
I do like the fact when you would say to an actor, look suspicious.
Just looks, in the broad sense. Look, yeah. If you do this, the audience will think that you are the person that, and it's it's cool. And none of it's in the stage direction, it's just the text. And so we're inventing these things along the way, adding as much or taking away too. Sometimes it's also the opposite. I think if you do that, they're gonna go down a dead end street and not be able to come back, or believe. So, it's certainly it's a different kind of thing to have to take on.
Patrick, it seems, you got the best director for the. Directors are always important, but he's really good for this type of show, of understanding it like he does.
That's what I said.
That's what you do. That's why I asked him.
You got to know, like Andrew, as long as I've been in this business, I got into this business late because, I wanted to be a journalist. But I was always nosy. I always wanted to know, okay, great, I can sing, I can do this, but how is that happening? Or how are you promoting the show? Or, and the first hints of wanting to direct. I loved my experience with Les Mis, because Trevor Nunn and John Caird were so great, especially Trevor, of doing what you just talked about, going up to an actor and infusing them with something that nobody else knew about. And I thought that was so incredible. And just getting to not having... I mean, I could sing. That's how I got into this business. And not having any formal acting training, how great was... I mean, not only are you in one of the biggest Broadway shows ever, but you're working with people from the RSC, and you're getting to do a process that is giving you so much that, you may not have even learned in 2-3 years in college. But when they asked me to assist on the first national tour, because I loved the show so much. I had covered so many of the different roles. That was when I thought, wow, I think I'd like to do this sometime. So there's similarities, and you know, you see yourself in other people. You know where they've gone through similar processes. As a matter of fact,
Les Mis,
Andrew and Adrian both did Les Mis. So it's a strong feeling that you have within, and 80% of the time, I've always hired good directors. There have been a few times when it hasn't turned out very good, but most of the time, you know, I think I've been spot on. So I appreciate you saying that with Andrew, because I agree wholeheartedly.
Well, let's let the audience decide, though. They're the ones, you know. You don't want to put the horse before the cart. We got 6 days till we open, so.
You're ready.
So me to be in a show like this, where it's not a musical, is it? And this may be the answer. Maybe no, but is there a lot more concentration? You know, there's not like you're not standing around as someone else sings. You're especially with this, it seems like there's always something going on.
Yeah, it's definitely a super active show. There's a lot of time. I mean, Molly specifically, to give you a little context, she and her husband run the guest house where the entire show takes place. And she's kind of this, like, young, doe-eyed, like, pretty naive, you know, seemingly person who's just, like, ready and excited to go on this business venture with her husband. And part of kind of like the way that the show evolves or devolves is that, you know, there's a lot of just watching and witnessing, because when you have something so specific like this genre, everybody is a suspect at one point or another, right? You have to, you are also, as the actor in the show, you're similarly playing the role of the audience as well, of like, you are absorbing who these people are, who do you trust, do you know these people, how do you know these people, right? Do they just appear? How long have you known them, right? So, you know, it's the age old, you know, anecdote of like, acting is reacting. There's a lot of time spent on stage where our lovely detective is walking around the stage and just spewing information, right? Spewing knowledge of like, oh my gosh, wait, you're right. Oh wait, maybe it is this person, right? So it is a lot of the like kind of reaction part of it. Totally, I would say that takes a good amount of brain power, especially because there's so much subtext to this show as well. There's so much history, like, and backstory to all of these characters, that before they arrive at Monkswell Manor, as actors, you have to kind of do the work of establishing it. Some of it is in the text and given to you, but some of it, you kind of, that's the fun part about being an actor. You got to fill in the blanks, right? You got to, you know, do the silly little things that people, you know, say. I've gone so far as to, like, write letters in my, you know, in my own personal practice to, like, people who might be in Molly's life, or, you know, things like that, just to help me get into the headspace of her. And with a musical, it's a little bit more... it's a little bit more spelled out for you, for the audience. You know, it's a little bit more, it's a different form, totally. And yeah, there is the luxury of like, oh, I'm not in this number. Great, I've got 5 minutes to go sit back and drink some water. And I have maybe 6 pages in Act Two that I'm not a part of. So, I mean, I'm grateful. I love the kind of task of being able to, you know, okay, I step off and get my new prop and I'm back on stage. But, yeah, it's definitely, every show that I work on, I learn something new. And this one has kind of taught me a lot about, like, my endurance and what I'm able to do. And, yeah, just, like, stamina. That's a big part of it. You get to the end of it, especially doing a dialect, doing, you know, received, you know, British pronunciation is a, you get to the end, you're a little tongue-tied, and you're like, okay, maybe I do need a vocal warm-up for this play that I'm doing. I didn't know if I needed that, but, yeah.
I was going to ask you, if there is a, you know, a dialect in it. You answered that.
Yeah, we're all doing some form of, like, received pronunciation, and it's been really wonderful to kind of use our hive mind of knowledge, of, you know, we would say the Berkshires, but we talk about the Berkshire police, you know, things like that. So I've had to, you know, chat with some people back in England and get some feedback on things if us Americans have had a question. But Yeah, it's been really lovely, and everyone's doing a fantastic job, and it's been so fun. It's just another element to these characters that really helps you feel like, oh my gosh, this is a different world, a different language, but I'm in it. You know, I'm here, ready to go.
Do you have to practice? Do you practice, you know, in a lot of off hours of just, just so you make it part of your dialect?
Yeah, I mean, not to sound, you know, spoiled, but I'm so lucky that I spent my time in England for the last year. So yeah. I have, you know, my ear for it is a little bit more specific, but I refuse to say any of my lines in an American accent. Like, even when we're like running things or we're talking about it, like I'll be like, oh no, I say that. And when I say the line, I say it in the accent because you can get yourself, it's muscle memory at the end of the day.
Sure.
Right? So you got to get yourself kind of into the space of doing it. Yeah.
Should have done
it. Yeah, I'm very lucky that she was in England for a couple of years too. That made it real easy for me.
We should have done this whole show and you should have been in dialect. You could have used it all, but how fun. I mean, you both just seem like you're just really enjoying yourself.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm waiting to, my wife said you haven't been in a bad mood since you got here, and she says that's very rare for you. And I said, "You know, you're right." So far I haven't had a bad day, which is great. Really great. I think I work at a good place right now.
I think you do. Yeah. We're going to take a quick break and wrap this up. What a great show. Mia, Andrew, and Patrick here this morning. Riverside Center for the Performing Arts, Agatha Christie's The Mousetrap begins July 15th. Do not wait. Get your tickets. RiversideDT.com. We'll be back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. You can access all episodes of Town Talk online at newstalk1230.net or on your favorite podcast streaming platform. Now, back to your host, Ted Schubel.
Riverside Center for the Performing Arts and Agatha Christie's The Mousetrap, beginning July 15th, riversidedt.com. is the website. Mia Gomez Montero, any part of this show that you really particularly like?
Oh gosh, yeah, but I don't know if I could say that on the air.
Okay, you might not be able to, because I was kidding.
No.
Okay.
I will say getting to scream at the top of my lungs was really fun.
Oh, okay.
Fun. Yeah, we pre-recorded it for, you know, vocal health and safety so that I don't have to, be worried about that kind of thing.
I always wondered that kind of thing,
But I think the first time I did it, everybody was like, nice, Mia. And I was like, sick, that's awesome, that's great. I would say that's like one of my favorite bits of the show. But I also just think, like, again, like I said, finding the comedy in it makes it really, really lovely and light, so that when, like, you know, there are some darker moments to the show, we take the audience kind of on a wild ride. And I love that they're going to be so immersed in the show. I can't wait. Yeah.
So, Andrew, I think if I ask you this question the right way, I don't think we've ever done a show in all these years where the person has said no comment. So I'll give you a chance to say no comment if that's what you want to say.
Oh, you're going to really tempt me here.
Will the audience be surprised at who did it?
The audience will be surprised that in Act One, they were laughing at someone that ends up with a gun in their hand. And I think I've given nothing away by saying that.
Okay. I really thought you'd say no comment. So the fact you said anything at all was, you two have just smiled through this whole thing. I mean, this is obviously just going to be a terrific show.
Thank you. I hope so too. I actually know so. Having watched it a bunch of times now, I think we're in such a good spot. I'm very confident that we're going to have a fun night. The audience is going to have a fun night when they come to see it, or afternoon.
Begins July 15th, Patrick. And again, we always say, don't miss it. And it sounds, especially as they talked about, this is the kind of thing to come back and see a few times. And especially when you know things and can come back and start putting some things together.
What I said after we watched the designer run, it's engaging. You know, sometimes you get a play or and there's a lot of exposition and stuff like that, you trail off. But I think the characters are so well written. The actors who are the vessels for these characters are so, the depth of them is just wonderful. You get so interested in each, you want to know more about them. You kind of would like to know more of their backstory. So I was engaged from the beginning to the end, and which means you don't sit there and go, oh my God, this, it goes by pretty quickly.
It's not a dusty British drawing room mystery.
No, no.
That was what I wanted to accomplish, not having that kind of show. And I think we really got there.
And you know, it was interesting, you know, I when I talked about doing it and I had never seen it, I read it, but I didn't want to know the end. So I got enough of sense of it. And the other day when we were at the designer room, they said, is there anybody here that doesn't know? And I said, me. And I purposely did that. I walked in and watched some rehearsal a week ago. And I left before it was going to get into the section that they, you know, it just, I was intrigued.
I read up on a few things, and in several things that I read said that there are, spoiler alert, it's mentioned at the end, and I never looked.
Yeah, so don't look. Come see it.
I don't want
to. And it's really great. It's pleasant to get to go on that ride, and I was surprised.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Wow, okay.
And I can't comment.
I needed somebody to say no comment, and I can't wait for me to hear you scream. So I'll be looking forward to that. RiversideDT.com. Get tickets. It starts July 15th. Agatha Christie's The Mousetrap. Patrick Ahern, Andrew Foote, and Mia Gomez Montero. Thank you all. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Ted.
That is it. Thank you for listening. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite streaming platform. The Glenn Beck program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.